So I need to tell you about Gwen Goldberg. I need to tell you that when we first started playing this game all those years ago in my apartment building's community room, there were not three players, there were four. There was John, who played Mark, there was Maya, who played Casey, Lauren, who played Kira, and my dear friend Betsy, who played Gwen Goldberg. I've known Betsy for over 20 years, and I need to tell you that unfortunately, this past week, she passed away. I need to tell you that as we entered lockdown and started making our game weekly, Betsy was diagnosed with cholangiocarcinoma, a rare and aggressive form of cancer. They gave her 6 months to live, but she beat the hell out of that estimate. She fought and thrived for another 2 years, and as it says in her obituary, when you die, the cancer dies too. So that's not a loss, it's a draw. She was 36. I need to tell you that Betsy was a very important part of not just my life, but of the first season of this game. She was an incredibly clever player and improviser in this game and the many others she and I participated in throughout the years. And as Gwen Goldberg, she brought a ton of substance to our silly little supernatural city. She was the one who brought Nick Sparks into the game in the first place. He was her mentor. The dagger that they trapped Marinette Jones's soul inside in season one, that was Gwen's dagger. That's Gwen's dagger on the cover of the album The Games We Play. The first custom artwork that we ever had made for this game features Gwen Goldberg sporting the eye patch that Betsy herself had made iconic in real life. But by the time we started publishing content, Betsy was no longer able to play and perform with us because, as you may or may not know, having cancer is an extremely demanding full-time job. Beyond just the struggles that happen medically with the disease itself, there's entire days that she would spend holding on the line with her insurance company, trying to explain why they have to pay for something that they had told her they would pay for. The point is, Betsy was an extremely important person to me and to so many people around the world who she touched with her fearless writing about the realities of living with stage 4 cancer. And now she's gone. So in honor of Betsy, I just wanted to say first that the rarer forms of cancer, and especially late stage cancer, deserves so much more attention and funding than they get. And if you have the resources to do so, I hope you'll join us in contributing to research into preventing, treating, and one day, as she and her oncologist put it, curing the incurable. And secondly, play games with your friends. I had known Betsy forever, and we worked together for many years, but in adult life, it was easy to just drift apart, and it was in no small part games that kept us in each other's lives. If you have friends you love and a table you can gather around, I hope you'll get them together and gather around it. So to Betsy, thank you for playing with us, and thank you for being my friend. And to all of you, as always, thank you for listening. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Book Club, where we come together and chat about this game that we all know and love and try to get to know it and love it just a little bit more. This time, what we will be talking about is safety tools, what they are, how to implement them, and how to succeed. I am joined by two very talented guests and keepers and hosts themselves, Zoe and Natalie. So would you please tell me a little bit about yourselves, who you are, what are your pronouns, and tell me about your podcasts before we jump in.
Hi, everybody. I am Zoe. My pronouns are she, they, and I am the narrator for The Writer's Room, a 7th C podcast. It is an actual play slash dramatization of the game, as well as I teach you how to play through segments called Notes with the Narrator. So if you're looking for a new tabletop RPG and really love pirates, come on over to the Writer's Room.
Thank you so much. And Natalie.
Hello, adventurers. I'm Natalie. I'm the keeper for the Storyteller Squad. We are another Monster of the Week actual play podcast, so you can find us wherever you find these lovely people. You may recognize me from the Expanded Universe episode I ran with the lovely cast of Monsters Playbook and the Writer's Room. It's becoming my thing where I just like to run games for people and created a very intricate and involved podcast cinematic universe. And yeah, our show is full of magic and fun and monsters and bits of slice of life and big gay lo-fi energy. So come check us out. Oh, and my pronouns are she, her. And yeah. Did I answer all the questions yet?
Yes.
Thanks for having us.
So I sort of think that it's possible that my cast suggested that I moderate this one as a prank because we'd been playing for quite some time before we really started recording. And as far as safety tools go, I didn't use them. So I am coming into this as very much an outsider as we've gotten more and more into this community and playing other games with other people, finding out about what they are and how they're used. So I'm coming in as something of a student here. So I'm hoping that lets you forgive me for all of the horrible things that I've done to my players and their characters.
Listen, we all start somewhere.
That's right. So for any listeners who might be, you know, where I'm at, on a surface level, could you please just briefly describe why safety tools are important and what is it about them that makes them especially important for TTRPGs?
Sure. Natalie, do you want to go first?
I can. I prepared some answers.
Oh, shit. Hi, I'm coming into this completely blind.
Hello, yes, I did the homework. Dope. I was valedictorian of my class.
I'm the class clown. I'm just here to provide comedic relief.
The perfect combo. The biggest thing or the biggest reason why safety tools are important and have become more like utilized, I think, especially in actual play and streaming productions is... Or has to do with the fact that role-playing is a pretty vulnerable experience. You are inviting emotional intensity with the people you are sitting down to tell a story with. And with that comes, obviously, all the things that high emotions can. And so, because it's so fast-paced and on the spot, having guidelines of what is or is not okay to take to that intense level of emotional experience and vulnerability, I think, is helpful. It's like the bumpers when you go bowling, you know. You want to make sure that you can throw your little bowling ball as hard as you want without knocking out, you know, someone else's pins or they're getting into their lane and ruining their fun. It's also an issue of choice, right? If you know you want to take a scene somewhere maybe a little serious or sad, if the entire everything is open to you, but you say, oh, this one topic, that removes that iteration because we know this player at the table is uncomfortable with this topic or, you know, has a personal history with it and doesn't want to include it in the story. Okay, cool. It helps you pick your lane, basically. You don't need an arranged marriage plot in your story if one of your players does not like that narrative idea. You can change the story and not upset your player and risk breaking your group apart, which then ends your game, show, stream, whatever, over a bunch of like misunderstandings and a very insignificant detail when it comes to like the overarching entirety of your game group and friendship circle. So,
Zoe, anything to add?
In the grand scheme of things, when you're sitting down to a table, whether it be with a bunch of friends or a bunch of strangers on the internet, you are sitting down, as Natalie said, to make yourself vulnerable in this space. You're creating a new space, and there should be comfort and stability in that space. And when it becomes uncomfortable and unstable, that's when, you know, friend groups fall apart, that's when podcasts dissolve, that's when a lot of bad things happen. And as much as I like to say, you know, I know everything there is to know about like my play group that I've been playing for like 13 years. Sometimes things happen in their life that you don't know about, and it will happen in game. And all of a sudden you are presented with something that was okay before and now is not. And the safety tools that we have now are specifically to prevent those instances from happening. I have, in one of those gang groups, actually, the 15-year-long one I've been running on and off, one of my players isn't a snake guy. And so we just don't have snakes ever on the show. It makes him extremely uncomfortable. Just like me, I have arachnophobia. So if you talk about spiders, you can mention spiders, we can talk about it, but the descriptions, we don't need to go there. My imagination can fill in the blanks. But all in all, on the surface level, safety tools are extremely important to create a safe and stable gaming space. And to keep the golden rule, which is everybody has to have fun. And that includes the GM too. I'm looking at all of you who think that you're not supposed to have fun. You're supposed to have fun. Come on now.
This life is short. Yeah. Don't make games with people. Don't make games you don't like.
Don't make games you don't like. Make games that you like and that your players like.
I've reread the question again just to see if there was anything I missed in my first response to it. And the other thing that makes them, quote, especially important for TTRPGs is that a lot of times people are coming in with characters that are very personal to them. And no matter how many, ways you want to say, oh, but it's the character, it's not you, it's like there's a part of you there. And it's a way for you to express yourself through that character. And so there's a lot more personal attachment there. As opposed to like a board game where your character is a tiny stick of cardboard in a plastic base and you have no reason to actually care whether they make it or not, or if something emotionally upsetting would happen to that little stand-up. You know, there's just, you're not invested. Mm-hmm. And with TTRPGs, if you're doing them right, you get invested real quick.
Yeah, just to kind of echo the thing that I came into this with is, I like to fuck around a lot with horror and horror elements in both my game and in also in my, choice in media. And one of the things that I really value in horror is the thing that's valuable to humans about fiction as a concept, which is that it's a way to engage with and process topics that can be difficult or frightening in an explicitly safe way. That not only is this not happening to me, but it's happening in a book, so nothing can get me, but I can still put my brain in this other person's scary shoes and experience what that might be like, such that in the future, if something like it happens to me or someone else, I'll be able to better empathize. Then what I hadn't put together until hearing you two talk about it is that that also dovetails into the other extremely basic human animal brain space, which is play. Not only am I entering into a fictional place where things are going to be different and look different, I'm going to be adding some of myself to it. I'm going to be moving things around and kind of seeing what happens. And yeah, if that kind of trust and safety gets punctured, you don't ever get it back. And then that's a doorway into humanity that closes forever.
Yeah. I actually, I tend to shy away from horror because just horror doesn't do it for me. I'm not a big fan of being scared. However, I did play a 10 Candles game most recently because the concept of it is just cool. If you haven't heard about it, it's amazing. You use candles and when they go out, your character dies, and it's actually pretty intense and cool. So if you ever get a hold of it, please do it. But there was a quote in the game that either my GM came up with or Steven himself, the creator of 10 Candles, came up with. And it was, this game is going to cause you to feel uncomfortable, but I never want you to feel unsafe.
Aww.
I love that. So, that horror game is meant to make you feel discomforted and unnerved and all of those really, uncomfortable feelings, but you should never ever feel unsafe when you're playing a TTRPG. So that is why safety tools exist and why they're important.
It's maybe important also to define what we mean by feeling safe. Because I think a lot of the times people look at the term safety tool and they think kitty gloves, or you can't have danger and scary things in your game because you gotta be safe. It's like, no, It just means that I'm going to walk away from the session not feeling anxious, guilty, worried that my friends are upset with me, or feeling upset with my friends, or, you know, stressing about where the story went or where my character ends up, that sort of thing. There's like, you can have I don't even want to call it game stress, but you can be like excited by the predicament your character gets put into without feeling real world dread about that situation. And that's what safety tools allow for, is to allow you to feel that excitement and really take it as far as it can go, but leaving all the other stuff out of the game and off the table that might make you caught, like, that would pull those negative feelings into your real self and your real life existence for the 6 days leading up to the next time you sit down at the table.
Yeah. To piggyback off of that, the last thing that I'm going to say is that when we sit down to game, we're escaping. Mm-hmm. It's escapism. At its base core, it's a form of escapism. And we don't want to bring some of those heavy real world topics into our escape space.
Yeah. And yeah, anybody who's listened to our show knows that it's not about not getting your feelings hurt, because I hurt my character's feelings all of the time.
Oh, we're terrible to our characters.
Yes.
My character's worst enemy is me. Like,
there is no better story than the human heart in conflict.
Taking an off-ramp from the theory zone for just a second, I want to talk straight up logistics. So what safety tools do you use, and how do you incorporate them into your session planning? And let's start with Zoe this time.
I have a couple of safety tools that I have used pretty frequently and often. And if I bring up the actual... I have a bunch of links and stuff, and I will absolutely post them once I find them. I apologize. Here they are.
And with permission, we will put them also in the show notes so anybody can take advantage of any of the resources that we discuss here today.
The most important tool that I use is the digital RPG consent checklist. Now, you can find this in a big Google Doc. I'll give you the link and everything. And it is literally just a checklist. It was created for the TTRPG Safety Toolkit, which is that drive I'm going to give you, and adapted from the checklist that appears in Consent in Gaming by Sean K. Reynolds and Shauna Germain, which is published by Monte Cook Games, which is a great read. If consent is just key, right? That's in our day and age, when we're sitting down to a table, we are consenting adults. We are sitting down to play in this fantasy space with these people. It is a social contract. And so the consent checklist basically just says, these are topics that may or may not appear in game. And if you like it, you know, there's a green little check mark that says, yes, cool, awesome, love this. There's a yellow check mark that says, I'm uncomfortable with it, but, you know, we're okay with it. I'll let you know. And then there's red, which is just, do not include this in the game. I don't want to see any element of it. I give this to my players when I begin a game, and I also give it to my players periodically to check in with them, because things change over time. And it has helped me run better, more efficient, more safe games, because there might be an element that I bring to the table. I'm like, man, wouldn't it be cool if, like, this character got kidnapped and then this happened? But then I double check my consent checklist and go, oh, nope, kidnapping's not on the table. I gotta scrap that. I gotta think of something else. And for a lot of people, sometimes it's difficult to let go of that narrative and just scrap it because, man, this is a cool story I want to tell. But you need to keep in mind that your player's safety is paramount. And if somebody's not cool with kidnapping, I got to make it something else. It's a bank robbery now. You know, like, you got to keep in mind that your players are there, and you as the GM, or even you as the player, you're there to have fun first, and safety is paramount to fun. And that's what I mean by that is someone else's discomfort should not be something that you're having fun over.
There was a quote from she's a therapist and she does a podcast that is people's therapy sessions. Esther Perel. She was doing one for people at work, and the way she put it was that if you are trying to be creative, you have to feel safe, because if you are feeling anxious, what your brain does is try to make itself safe, and that prevents you from being able to take the kinds of risks that are necessary to be creative and tell a story and play a game. Yeah.
So RPG consent checklist is my number one. My number two is the X card by, I apologize if I mispronounce your name, I'm so sorry, John Stavropoulos. It is just simply, if there is a topic or theme or something that comes up in the game itself, there is either a note card, or for online gaming, there's an add-on that you can add where it like flashes the screen red or puts up a big X in front of the screen. And that basically just means stop. We do not continue with that topic. That is a subject that we no longer need to continue on with, and we move on. And that also means that, like, whoever, it's an anonymous thing mostly, but whoever hits the X card, you don't have to explain why. You don't have to come up with a reason. It's just a group unspoken rule that when the X card comes up, you move on. If you want to talk to your GM or the player about it, if they are in a comfortable space to do that, absolutely give them that time. But the X card is just a safety mechanism to go, no, skip. I'd like to skip that dialogue
option,
please.
Scene is over. Yeah.
Scene's over. And the last one I use is the OK check-in, which is coming from the LARP community. There's multiple different versions of this, but it's a method to use hand signals to check in. So most of the time I'll have my camera on when we're running, even though my podcast is audio-based. And it's if the scene is getting intense and, you know, we do kind of put ourselves in that role of that character. And if I'm seeing one of my players getting really upset and crying and angry and shaking, if I see that, I will throw up the okay symbol of like, are you good? Are you cool? Without interrupting the scene. And all they have to do is do the same thing. They're like, if they give me the okay symbol, that means they're acting. That means that they're still in the scene and they're enjoying this. If they throw up any other symbol, if it's a fist, a closed fist, a stop hand, or an X or anything else, that means that they, the player, are experiencing something that has transcended the character and transcended the scene, and we need to stop. And we need to have a check-in. We need to have like a mental health check-in at that point. So those are the three major ones that I use. There are so many more. I know that Lines and Veils exists, which is basically the same thing as the consent checklist, but a different way of flavoring it. Those are the ones that I use, and they have been extremely effective for making my gaming table safe.
And Natalie, what do you use?
Pretty much the same thing. I will say that Zoe's checklist, I really enjoy. For games that I've run, I generally do stick to the Lines and Veils thing, but I think I just have been meaning to ask for that link so I can use both. Right, Lines and Veils, just to briefly go over that, since that's like the big thing that my group does. When you ask your players to submit or tell you their Lines and Veils, a line is something that absolutely will not exist in the gaming space if anyone brings it up. Not a majority of people, not, the GM versus the players, like anyone at the table has a line, that topic, that, type of experience or action just will not occur within the game. Whereas veils are things people are okay hearing described, like Zoe mentioned with the arachnophobia. Like, you can mention that there are these things in an environment, but don't describe what they're doing. Don't get into detail. Don't spend too long focusing the camera or the narration on those things. And this generally a pretty widely accepted one is like you know, consensual sexual relations between characters. It's like, we all know that it happens, and if you're doing romance at your table, like, okay, cool, that can be a thing that we establish occurs, but we're not going to, like, you know, put on Barry Manilow and describe and roll checks and shit for that. Like, no.
We pan to the fireplace.
We pan to the fireplace. Movie. We fade to black. We hit cutscene and music transition. It's, you know, so it's okay to drift close, but then again, the camera does not linger on it long. And that's Lines and Veils. And the way I do it is in my onboarding document, I just have a chart and it's, you know, two columns. Here are the lines, here are the veils. And when I send that link out, I just say, please fill this in. And I don't check who wrote what, because I like to keep things anonymous. That way there's no, like, pressure of, like, oh, well, I have this line, but I think it's kind of dumb. And I don't want people to just, like, no, just whatever. Anything on that list. It doesn't matter whose it is. It doesn't matter, you know, when you get to filling it out. If it happens day of, if you're just busy and you're, you know, forgot to do it, but then you're like, oh, crap, I really, and it's in my plot, then I go, okay, either we reschedule or I just say, oh, I'm going to swap this in and out. X card, we like, it's there. It exists as a thing that I've told players and people I play with is, like, okay to use, but I've never had to do that, probably because I so stress on the Lines and Veils beginning step anyway. And I personally just don't tend to run adventures that get, like, very, you know, upsetting a lot of the time. Like I said, we like a chill vibe full of high adventure and, you know, maybe some dark, tense danger, but nothing too extreme. But then the other tool that I guess I use instinctually, but when I was thinking about, like, well, what do I do? It's constant communication and check-in with the people I'm playing with, both before, after, and, like, during game. And that is a thing you can do as a player. It's a thing you can do as a game runner. You just make sure you're talking with the people you're doing this, you know, quote, fun hobby with, so that anytime you have a stressful situation in game, anytime, you know, a character really gets emotional about something, just a quick little, are we good to move on? Yes? Okay. Do you need a water break? Do you want to take a second and decompress from that scene? That was a lot. Sure. You know, post-session, how are you feeling about last session? Did you think it went in the right direction? Do you, you know, want to retake a line, do a scene, if it's for production or if it's, you know, a live thing and you can't ever redo it? You say, okay, that upset you. How do we avoid that in the future? Because we don't want to repeat a thing that caused you, you know, out of game stress. That's I think the big things is checking in, and then all the tools Zoe mentioned, and whether you use a list versus Lines and Veils, it really just sort of boils down to whether you want to, like, trust that your list covers enough topics and anything else that's, like, more specific than your list, people will just bring up to you. Mm-hmm. Or if you leave it completely open-ended, and then maybe people will write down their big, like, top of the list items and might forget to add some and then would have to do it afterwards. So you sort of risk, like, missing something or having something happen that someone didn't realize was a line for them at first.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then, I mean, the thing to do after that is just say, oh, okay, well, now we know and we will not include that again. Now let's, you know, work on getting you to feel safe again at the table because this thing came up and the safety tools, I don't want to use the word failed, but, like, didn't cover us enough. And we need to, you know, figure out how do we make them more effective for our group.
I like what you're saying about that this whole thing, both of you have mentioned this, that this whole thing is an ongoing process. There's a lot of sort of RPG related subreddits that just will make me very, very sad because you get people asking, how do I manage this situation between me and my GM or between me and my player? And it's like, when things have gone so far, anytime you go, hey man, can I talk to you? That becomes such a big barrier. It's some hurdle to jump over that makes the whole conversation scarier, when really you read a lot of these and you're like, oh, you needed to be talking to each other this whole time. You needed to have talked about this, and now it's tough. So seconding on that of just continue to talk about it and make talking about it, make the idea of talking about it normal, because it is.
Yes.
You're friends.
And what Zoe said about, you know, bringing it up constantly, it's good to remind people that these things are out there, because you might have a group of people you've been playing with them forever. And, you know, they did their safety tools at the beginning. You've been going, no problems. But maybe there's this like lingering thing and they don't want to bring it up. Cause like you said, it's like, I have to have this hard conversation. But if you or someone else in the group is constantly saying, hey, just so everyone knows, update those safety tools. If you got anything, it's been a while since we checked in.
Anybody want to have a small version of a hard conversation?
Right. You know, there's an easy ramp up to maybe the more difficult thing of saying like, actually, I've had this issue and I don't like blah, 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 you know. So,
I want to ask this next question and I don't want to be too leading about it because I have a version of it that I want to hear the answer to for propaganda purposes, but I also want to know the actual answer to it. Has there ever, even a single time, been something that you really wanted to incorporate into a game, but felt that you couldn't because it violated another player's stated boundaries and like that bummed you out major or whatever? Like when those things knock into each other, what's your reaction to it, I guess, is the actual question.
To answer the question, there was in the very beginning of the podcast, the reference obviously I'm making is to the writer's room. Without too many spoilers, one of my cast's characters is from Avalon, which is totally not England, UK. And they're big on the fae thing. They're big on the she. If you don't know what those are, they're, you know, these creatures that are beyond the veil and that Shakespearean. Go look it up. If you don't know what it is, go look it up. But he wanted to be cursed by a character that came by an NPC character who is a fae, and wanted to really like put his character through the ringer for making an offhanded comment that to any normal person wouldn't have mattered, but to a fae, it was cutting. It was something that you just don't do. It was like something derogatory, right? Which would grant him a curse. And we talked about it a lot, and he was super excited to do that. And then finally, when the session happened, he pulled me aside. He's like, hey, I've been going through some really heavy personal stuff outside a game. Can we scrap that whole storyline? And I went, yeah, give me 5 minutes, and we'll come back, right? I'm going to go get some tea. I'm going to go do the thing, and I'm going to think about this. We will absolutely not touch any of that. Do you really want none of it? He goes, none of it. I don't think I can handle it right now. And I said, okay. So I got off the call. I went and got my tea. And yeah, there was that small part of me that was bummed. And the only reason I was bummed, it wasn't because of some selfish thing of like, oh, I really wanted to curse that player. Damn. Shit. It was the reason why I was bummed is because the player was excited to do that. And I'm always excited when they're excited. Like they give me serotonin when that happens. And so I was excited for him. And the reason why I was like, oh man. All right. Well, shoot, dang it.
Yeah.
Now I gotta come up with something else.
Now I have to figure some other way to make that person as happy as I was about to make them.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And it did put a little bit of extra pressure on me to perform, because that's what we do. Mm-hmm. But all in all, at the end of the day, at the end of the session, we didn't do that. We did something else entirely. And it was more, he came up to me afterwards and he's like, Zoe, that was excellent. That was so much fun. Thank you for you know, being patient with me. Aww. and coming up with something that frankly, honestly, was way better than what we came up with. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? At the end of the day, I'll take it. That's what I'm here for. And so, yeah, I have felt that, but it wasn't because of some selfish inner turmoil of, damn, I really wanted to mess with that player. It was because they were excited as I was.
To a much lesser extent, there's an NPC in our campaign who I don't get to use as much because I came up with her with one player. And then when I debuted her, I found out from a couple of my players that they also share some sort of uncomfy feelings about spiders. And I went,
so long. This
I wasn't on the list yet. Okay. Well, here we go. And so I, you know, kind of in the moment just decided like, okay, well, I'm going to make this character know that that is a thing that people have and that she causes that. And so she, in particular, is very aware that her monstrous nature can put people off. And so she, you know, she has like a counter she stands behind all the time. And, you know, she's constantly like standing behind curtains so that people can just talk to her, but she doesn't have to be visually within their space. And just in general, after that, I had, you know, ideas for what she could do in the story. And I just haven't touched on it much, you know, to again, provide that safe experience and not, you know, bring up those feelings of like dread and phobia. And the thing with that is like, yeah, it's a bummer, but there's plenty of other good ideas in the world that my players and I are making. And so just because you don't get to do the one cool thing does not mean that there are not a million other cool things to replace that with and let them take the spotlight and just say, save it for a game with a different group or save it for an, you know, an episode they're never going to be in or listen to or whatever.
Or my rude thing that I like to say, maybe just write a book.
Yeah.
If you want to see it, write it as a book.
Right.
I like that in both of your examples that when that happened, when you had to bin something because someone said, I don't want that in the game, in both cases, it led to you having to create something ultimately more interesting. Because like the idea of someone with a monstrous aspect to their body that they're like, oh gosh, I know, I'll be over here.
I'm sorry.
That's so lovely.
Yep.
In fact, I know exactly which NPC you're talking about, and she is my favorite, even though I
have a spider's thing.
Do you understand the paradox I face? Because also my players have said the same thing about, it's Phoebe Wicket.
We love Phoebe.
Everyone.
We love her so
she's
much.
She's a Drider. She works at the agency and she's really sweet. She just happens to be really scary.
She's super self-conscious that she is a Drider.
I suppose Drider is not the right word. She's not an elf. She, you know, take that idea. Modern AU. And again, like, I think in knowing that I had to make this, you know, sort of unnerving, scary character less scary and not focus so much on her monstrous side, it did bring out this like very adorable sort of, you know, energy to her. And so now it is okay for me to like mention her offhand and the players don't go, oh, no, don't talk about that one.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, no, we all like Phoebe. It's just we don't pan the camera down below her waist.
You can all focus on the parts about the thing about her that you like.
Yeah. So the result then, or I think the thing to take away from that is both that it is okay to feel that disappointment, right? There is nothing wrong with saying or being caught off guard in any kind of roleplay situation where you really liked an idea, but now that idea can't happen. You can feel disappointed as long as you respect the rules. Don't get so married to something that losing it will completely ruin your fun, you know, or take the joy out of it for you. And that's just, I mean, that's just good improv / TTRPG advice. And if it does, take a second, recognize that, and then say, okay, this is still just a game. This is still a improvised story. So let's improvise in a way that makes everyone, you know, feel safe and welcomed in this space we're sharing.
Like I said, I very clumsily didn't do any of this kind of stuff. So I have a good deal of things in my game that are sort of more, I would say, if you know the reference, the Dark Souls method, where like, if you can put two and two together and combine these two pieces of information that you found here and here, something very, very bad happened in order to put this character in this position. I'm not going to show you that thing because gross, but I do want, like, when I'm introducing an idea like that in order to make the world feel scary, I don't want it to be graphic. I don't want it to be offensive. I don't want it to be shocking. I want it to be oblique. And like, I wanted to hide behind a counter a little bit or stand behind some drapes. Full disclosure, my sort of propaganda purpose with this question was for people who view things like safety tools as potential barriers to telling the story I want to tell. And like, if I can't deal with these topics, then I'm not going to be able to do what I want to do just because it's going to make my players feel sad. But when you put it like, well, that's the rules, that makes that kind of attitude feel like just as big of a baby as the guy who's like, well, I want to attack that guy, but I rolled bad, so now I'm mad. That's the rules, man.
Them's the rules.
You tried to do a thing, you rolled low, you don't do that thing. Move on. You wanted to do a thing. It's not going to fly with the players at the table. You don't do that thing. Move on. That's the game.
Yeah. I mean, your example works for pretty much any rule that is a hard and fast rule. It's like, oh, but I really wanted to do insider trading in the stock market and now I'm under arrest, but I wanted to do it. Like,
I really didn't want to turn in my government paperwork and now I'm being arrested for tax fraud.
I played Dungeons and Dragons with an 8-year-old and he was able to grasp that rule. So yeah, you can handle it too.
I am going to adopt your phrase though too of like, if you really are going to be that big a baby about it, write a book.
Write a book.
Yeah.
Write a book. If you are so married to that idea and so bummed out that it didn't happen, go fucking write it
absolutely
down.
Absolutely. I say it to be rude, but I also say it not to be rude because like you clearly have a story. Yeah. It's like this other comparison has aged poorly since the series has actually ended, but I watched and loved the first season of that show Dexter. And then because there was only one season at the time, I went and found the books that it's based on and read one of those. That hit me that like the guy who wrote that book wrote it as a book because he couldn't write a TV show. It's not a good book. The book is bad. The show is good. That like it's, and it's the same thing. You're playing in the wrong medium. You have this story of this epic hero that you want to have. Don't play Dungeons and Dragons to do that. Write the book. You play games to learn the story. Anyway, that's a totally different episode of Book Club.
Not everything is meant for improvised collaborative storytelling. It should be fun.
This one, we've mentioned a few things. What is the protocol for when a player strays into an area that you know or have agreed is a no-go zone? Is there a script for keeper to player or player to player or player to keeper callouts that everybody knows to use? Part of what I'm trying to do with this is to let listeners like me get a playbook. In that moment, is there a thing that everybody kind of knows to do? Something like the X card, but what's the protocol?
So I've experienced it 3 times. In the writer's room, 2 of which were me. In the podcast, there is an episode called Notes with the Narrator, otherwise known as Newton, Volume 6, A Safe Place. And the reason I created that is because we created a spooky thing. And that spooky thing done triggered the GM. And in that moment, let me preface this by saying, yes, the X card exists. Yes, you've got the consent checklist. You have all of these safety tools in place. If something happens at the table that you're not aware of, that no one is aware of, sometimes in the moment, you can't do the X card. You can't say anything. You become nonverbal. You are no longer in that moment. And unfortunately, I don't think there is a set, like, rule set or protocol other than making sure that you're checking in as you're playing. Don't become so immersed that you lose the reality of the situation, which is we're a bunch of people at a table gaming. I got so triggered at one point, and this was actually recently, this is a different thing. I got so triggered that I couldn't verbally state anything. I was in another place entirely. I was sent back to a darker area in my mind that when my players recognized that, hey, something's wrong with Zoe, I shut off my camera, I shut off my microphone, and I had to bounce. I had to bounce for a good 20 minutes just to recenter myself. And that in hindsight, one of my players actually was like, why didn't she throw up the X card? Why didn't she do any of that? And it's because the reality is that I couldn't. Like, it had triggered me so bad that I became nonverbal. I became noncommunicative. I became catatonic. And unfortunately, at a table, like a physical table, that's really easy to pick up on. That is really, really easy, especially if you're in tune with people's moods, if you're an empath, or if you're just one of those extroverts that really is like, I know everybody's mood at every single time. Like, you're something's going on with you. What's happening? But through a screen and through a camera and digitally, it's very difficult to do that. And so when that happens, as much as I would like to say, hey, throw up an X or block your screen or do whatever it is, it literally boils down to whatever makes you safe in the moment, do it. If you just have to take off your headphones and just be away from the table, if you have to physically walk away from your computer screen, do it. Whatever you got to do to make yourself feel safe, just do it. And the players will either get it or the GM will get it. Play just stops at that point. Play should stop at that point. Let me be perfectly clear. Play should stop. You should check in with that player and make sure that they're okay.
Yeah, I think the protocol is less a what is like the thing to do if you are the person experiencing this, you know, emotional distress. It is an onus put on everyone else at the table to know that, oh, someone stepped away, pause, you know, or, oh, someone needs a minute. Okay, do you want us to pivot and go to a different thing? Okay. If, you know, if they're that able to communicate and just say, I just need a second to clear my head. Okay, sure. We'll come back to you or whatever, you know, but the protocol is more on your fellow players and game runner to say, we know how to handle when someone needs time, or we know how to handle when we have to stop unexpectedly.
What I'm kind of getting at is what kind of protocols and scripts do you use to avoid it from getting to that place? Like when things start to veer in a direction that's going to lead down to something, to be like, hey, wasn't that a line that we had talked about? Like, how, like, prior to anyone actually getting the emotional distress, something that, like, what's a thing that we could impart to the people who might not know what that's like, to help control and help manage that kind of flow of content and flow of topics?
I mean, I can speak to a couple examples where, you know, a player started speaking about something and taking the topic of the conversation their character was having with another character in a direction where I knew that I did not want that to be where the scene went at all. And so as GM, you know, I put on my adult GM voice and was just like, nope, we're not doing that. Fully not like, hey, it's you have to be very...
teacher voice.
You know, yeah, teacher voice or, you know, just authority voice of, nope, change that, roll it back, try again. And if that causes someone to be like, I need a second, it's like, sure, but we're not doing the thing you were doing, you know. Or if, like, and it's happened to me where I've used like a word in description and people have like brought up and then said like, we have to change that in ADR. It's like, oh, what did I say? Oh, you're right, yep, didn't even think of that. Okay, yep, in context, let's swap that out. Matt, pick up, you know, our editor. And it's just, yeah, I unfortunately don't think there is a like
perfect
checklist of things to do, because it's like if you ask like a, you know, a person who spits fire, right? Like, how do you make sure that you are never going to get burned doing this thing? It's like, you can't. You will, you know, when you're in food service, how do you make sure you never cut yourself with your knife? Like, you will. You just will. like Zoe and I are here and we've shared several examples of stuff that's happened with us playing together. And we are friends, like very good friends at this point. Aww. And we go into this with the best of intentions. But again, it's like what we've said at the top. This is a vulnerable and emotionally fragile thing that we sometimes get into. And so, yeah, your feelings will get hurt sometimes. But the point is that that does not mean it's the end of the world. If you have these systems in place to say, okay, this has happened. It is unfortunate it has happened. But now we know how to resolve this so that healing can occur and we can move on from here better and, you know, more equipped to avoid at least that particular hazard in the future.
There is no ideal solution or protocol to a non-ideal reality. And the best advice that I can give, the best guideline, is being completely transparent with everybody at the table. I keep a little, like, I have this. It's basically, for those listening, it is a booklet of note cards. And I have red ones specifically that label all of our red flags, our lines, our veils. And it's always in front of me. Mm. Always. My memory is garbage. And so I have to have these visual reminders. And if I'm physically at a table with my players, those reminders are then handouts, unless they want to write it down and keep it themselves. But I give those to each player so that they can have it in front of them so that when they go on a scene, they can check themselves too. But as Natalie had stated, it's also kind of on everybody. It's not just on the GM or on that player. This is a social contract that we're all signing secretly together, and we all have to keep each other in check sometimes. And yeah, it has happened where a player was starting to veer into some really dangerous territory, and I have to put on my, I got to put on my narrator voice and go, that's where we're stopping for today. We'll be right back. Yeah. We'll be okay. I like to, at least for me, to remove the suddenness of it. I'll put on the grandfather voice from The Princess Bride and be like, "All right, I see the E getting upset. Let's pause a little bit. Let's go
maybe
back.
We'll take a break here.
Maybe we'll take
and
a
one
break.
More thing.
And one more thing. Yeah. So it is important, GMs out there, if it starts to stray into one of those topics, that you have to put your foot down. If you are cognizant enough to do so, players, same thing. If the GM is straying into territory that we have already approved that is not okay, then got to keep each other in check. Because sometimes we forget. And sometimes we get so lost in the sauce that we forget.
I'm so glad to be talking about this because part of my, look at me, I'm a white guy. So I have a lot of connection to the parts of the community, or like I've seen and engaged, I make up guys in my head to get mad at that. Like the perspective that I kind of see, the sort of toxic imaginary perspective, is this idea that RPGs are at once this super powerful storytelling medium and community building force that must be taken seriously and protected from any who would attack it, but also want to have the same thing in their head that it's just a game and therefore it's immune from any criticism and I shouldn't have to police my thoughts, actions, or ideas. And you can't have both of those things. The comparison to restaurants is apt because, as you've both mentioned, that like this is, it's a mentally taxing and vulnerable thing. And if you go into it thinking, oh, it's just a game, it can't hurt me in any way, then yeah, sometimes you're gonna. I have a cut on my finger from when I used to work at Brugger's Bagel Bakery. Like, you can cut yourself with those knives. You can hurt each other's feelings with these super intense words. And if you, with these worlds and these characters and these things that you didn't realize how much of yourself you were putting into it. And so as long as you go into it recognizing that this is both important and dangerous and worthy of care, then it's manageable. If there's not a script or an instant easy fix, then there is at least a way back or a way out. So the other thing that I wanted to talk briefly about, and again, you two have mentioned this in passing, that when you are making these games as a show, you have two audiences to consider. You have the players that you are building the story with, and in some cases inflicting the story upon, and then you have the listeners who are just taking it in. So how do you manage potentially uncomfortable topics that may have been okayed by the table, but might still be upsetting to listeners? So how does that work?
Well, as I mentioned before, I will list trigger warnings. Mm-hmm. I will, to the best of my ability, list whatever might be triggering. Now, I could, in theory, go through and with a fine-tooth comb and label everything mm-hmm. as triggering content, because I don't know, right? My table, I know exactly what triggers them. The thousands upon thousands of people that might listen to it, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I can't promise that I will make it so that you can listen to this scot-free. What I can promise is that what I find as triggering content, or what my peers find as triggering content, because I do have people pre-listen, maybe pre-screen the episode for me to pick up on things that maybe I can't hear or I'm not paying attention to as the one and sole editor of my podcast, I'm going to try my damnedest to make it as easily digestible as possible. And so I'm going to put trigger warnings in front. So for example, I have a fight with a sea beast. There's a lot of sound effects that are loud. I use gunshots a lot as my sound effects, and I know that that's triggering. Yeah. So whenever there is a gunshot, there's a trigger warning, bullets, explosions, lightning, thunder, all those big auditory overwhelming noises. But sometimes I slip. Sometimes there's something that a community member will find and say, hey, you might want to put a trigger warning here because it triggered me. And I have to take that with a grain of salt, because if it's just one person, I can't make everybody right. happy. But at the same time, if multiple people are starting to tell me, hey, you should really put a trigger warning here, then by all means, I will do everything in my power. But it is tough sometimes, because I do have a small audience of three, yeah. sometimes six. And then I have the audience, yes. capital A, thousands, lots of zeros.
Well, let me bounce in on this, because I actually am of, I don't know if this is a controversial take, but it's slightly not aligned for maybe the first time in this conversation with Zoe.
Okay. And that's okay.
In that I tend not to put content warnings in our show notes for the exact reason you described of you can't cover everyone. And I'm sort of the opinion that if you can't cover for everyone, then like I don't see the benefit in bending over backwards to like selectively say, these are the people I'm going to outwardly, you know, show attention and care towards by saying, well, this is maybe triggering to some people, so I'm going to list this one. And then it's like, well, why didn't you list a warning for all the other things? It's like, because I didn't know those other things were your triggers, you know? And at that point, it's like Zoe said, you can go through everything with a fine tooth comb and say, well, this could upset someone here and this could upset someone there. But it's like, the show is rated explicit for swearing and, you know, themes of sexuality and stuff, because whatever, but like also for the fact that I want people who are adults to be the people consuming the show that we make, because while, you know, you can listen to something and have it upset you, if you are a listener, you have the benefit of going, pause, and you can pick up that episode later. You can skip ahead. You can just say, I'll figure out what happened through context and just jump to the next episode. Or you say, that made me uncomfortable, but I can get through it. I just need time to be like, this is what's happening in the episode they're sharing with me, right? As an outside consumer of the content, you have way more power than the people who are living it and experience it in the moment during the session to say, that's not for me, so I'm going to back away. Fine. That's okay. You didn't have to continue for the next hour of an episode after that thing happened, because you can just say, I'll catch up another way, or I'll ask someone for the, you know, the TLDR, whatever, the show summary. I'll ask for spoilers from someone else. So I think it is noble to include content warnings in front of stuff. And there have been times where I specifically knew, like, this episode is going to go dark, or this episode is going to be very serious. In fact, our very next arc, I'm probably going to put a content warning that says this arc is more intense than our previous arcs have been. Just so you are aware, consume it responsibly and at your, you know, use your discretion when, you know, processing the emotions it may elicit. And that's just, you know, I don't know, that's exactly what it's going to say, but something to that effect, to just say, just so you know, we as a table spent a lot of time on this arc checking in with each other because it got so, you know, because we went to these places and we had fun going to these places because we were being safe. So I'm letting you know now, if you are concerned or if you know you're a very sensitive person to certain topics, just approach this arc with caution and maybe ask a friend of yours to listen to it with you, or just know that, like, you shouldn't listen at work, or you shouldn't listen, you know, when you got to go somewhere right afterwards. Anything
some
like
place
that.
Where crying isn't an okay thing to start doing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, but again, you know, it's, you know, there's no content warning ahead of, like,
fantasy violence.
Yeah. Like, you know, you don't get a content warning when you go to see a movie. You just see PG-13. Okay. I know generally what I might expect from something like that.
Rated
you
R.
You don't get a con. Exactly. Yeah. Rated R. Rated NC-17. Oh, shit. That some stuff that I might find upsetting in it. Wow.
They say fuck three times.
You know, there's no content warning in front of live stream shows like Critical Role or the Acquisitions Incorporated, you know, stuff, unless they know as the GM, oh, I'm going to really stick it to my players tonight, you know, and then they might say something. But generally, there isn't that sort of thing. And so,
it's interesting. I feel like our approach is kind of somewhere in the middle, that, like, I can definitely see this idea that if I start calling out, these are contents that are worth warning you about, that has the disingenuous implication that I therefore believe these other content warnings aren't worth warning you about. And then, then it feels like it can be taken like you're making a value judgment. I mean, our approach is to kind of, we have the things that we believe to be sort of covered under the adult topics blanket, but then we have things that we know either from how the session went or from, you know, just knowing what Tumblr and the community is going through, where is it going to spike above that? And when we have something that we think will spike above it, we'll put something about that. And, like, same deal. Our the final arc of our season is bad. It's dark. Like, the bad guys are bad people. So I tell them to be careful and just do that. So I hope that the answer here is that you, like, I don't know. I really am interested in the fact that there is this kind of, there's differing ideas on this. And the idea that, as we mentioned in the sort of previous question and topic, that there is no perfect right answer. There's no victory, but we do what we can to keep each other safe and happy. Mm-hmm. I should have had a question that was funny for the end.
Pick it up a little bit.
I thank you both so much for talking. I'm not going to wind this down just yet.
if you're thinking of ending, I have one important point I think that I could like sum up what we've been talking about with, which is that if you are a game runner, or even if you're a player, I suppose, but if you are engaging in this thing that we like to do, which is improvisational storytelling, there is no narrative beat, surprise, epic moment, dramatic scene, or joke that will ever be worth hurting your friend or player over. This is make-believe, and if you have to, make-believe you are someone who cares about the well-being and fun of your friends and use the goddamn safety tools.
Yeah.
The question that always inevitably comes up when we start talking about whether and when and how to put in content warnings is, will including that be spoilery to the episode, and will that ruin the surprise of whatever it is? And my rude thing that I like to say about that is, any story worth telling should be worth telling twice. So if you can't get your message across, unless everything is a secret, maybe go back to storytelling school.
Yeah. That's actually a huge point there, because I've been running games for nigh on 20 years now. And I've only been running 7C for about 4. And 7C, the mechanic is that Natalie had talked about, is a story mechanic. That's your experience points. That's how you grow. You literally write a little mini character story for you. The takeaway from that is, I have players that sometimes write out in copious detail what their story step is, how they want it to go, how they see it happening and everything. And I look at that story step and I go, oh boy, I'm going to try my best, but you might be very disappointed, because that right there is a railroad spike. And I am not running a railroad here. Trying to tell a high narrative game such as 7C is like herding a bag of cats. It doesn't go well. Whatever plan that you make instantly is destroyed the second it makes contact with the players. So the
guilty as charged.
I'm looking at you, Angelica. You'll all hear it eventually. But I wanted to surprise my players so many times with so many plot points, and it led eventually to a lot of miscommunication and misunderstanding of how a story was supposed to go, how this character was supposed to interact, how the plot was supposed to move forward. And I did keep a lot of things behind my screen. I was like, ooh, this is a cool idea that I'm going to throw at them later. And ooh, this is fun. Right around halfway through the season, I finally just like pushed the screen over and was like, here you go. This is everything. This is all of it. Including the notes that I took for later that you gave me. This is everything that I was going to throw at you. What do you think would make a cool story? Yeah. And finally they were like, holy shit, this red thread here, let's follow this. Yeah. 'Cause this, I wasn't even thinking about that. And had you surprised me with it, I would have been really upset. But I like the fact that I know about it and that I can contribute to the story.
Hey, so, red thread, we love a Theseus reference.
We love Theseus. We there is no Pepe Silva. Like, we love it. We love those moments.
I actually had that exact same thing happen. We are running, this is spoilery as heck. We are, well, I won't say anything about it because it is Patreon exclusive. Please subscribe in the future when we have one. That a character that we were playing with had a rival. In the mechanics, you get an ally and a rival. And the nature of that rival was going to be a surprise. And my big advantage in planning things that I then don't get disappointed when they don't happen is that I immediately forget them all. So I very accidentally just read aloud from my plan notes to the team and was like, oh, so this person is that. And they're like this. And it's, oh, But what that has then allowed is that the player, knowing that the character doesn't know this, can set up so many more interesting scenarios because they have this dramatic irony of, I know this thing, but I'm smart enough to play it like they don't and move in this direction.
That's it right there. That's the key. That is the key of having a group of players that can keep the meta separate from the game. And they know what's coming. They know exactly what to throw at them. And sometimes they are more excited to tell that story because, as I stated before, who is the worst enemy of your character? The player who's playing them. They will absolutely bite at the bit to throw whatever bullshit you present to them. And they will take that and they will run with it. They will go and get a touchdown and it will be great and the story will be better for it. So I guess long story short is sometimes surprising your players isn't worth the possible downfall of that. Some people don't like surprises.
Well, and if I could, I am going to wind it down here to be, we're going on 2 hours, so be respectful of time. If there's anything else, you two want to get in here, now's the time.
I was just going to say too, that like, we've been talking about all of this, maybe not intentionally, but sort of within the context of all of us being, you know, AP creators. And for all of our games, we are doing this with the idea of it needs to be a good story
to be consumed.
Because this is a show, right? This is a thing we want to share with more than just the people at our table and more than having it be just a thing where we get together on a Sunday and have snacks and joke around a bunch, right? So for us, the narrative is the thing. Like, that's the thing we're there to do, not so much make the numbers go up or down against an imaginary creature or whatever. But that being said, all of these tools will make your casual games so much better than if you ignored them or just said, well, we're not producing anything. It doesn't have to be as serious. It's like, yeah, but your friendship should be as serious. That's the thing that really matters and you should protect. And that's what these tools are there to do. And so if you have a campaign that you're about to wrap up and you know you want to throw some real, like, epic, crazy stuff at your players, maybe just give them a hint or let them know what things you are considering as options that are on the table, because then your big epic final campaign does not get derailed by you, you know, pulling out your surprise and going, ta-da, and your player going, I have to walk away, right? Well, I can't think of anything worse than being very excited for a huge climax and then having someone at the table go, actually, I'm not okay with where this is going. It's like, that's why the tools exist. That's why you should prioritize people's enjoyment and, you know, what they're going to experience day of over, you know, the twist. Because again, that's what books are for.
Yeah.
And not things that involve real people in real time.
Real friendships.
Where anything can happen.
Exactly. And I mentioned it before, the golden rule of gaming. It's my golden rule. It should really be the golden rule. Everybody should have fun. That includes the GM. And if you're not having fun, something's got to change. Something has to change. It's got to. Nothing else matters. The story doesn't matter, the character arcs don't matter, the plot doesn't matter, the big bad doesn't matter. None of that shit matters if you're not having fun. So, adhere to the golden rule.
And go have some fun.
Let's go
and be safe.
Have some fun. I think I want to say some more things because I like to talk.
Yeah.
That, like, when you think about even whether you're recording it to be put out as a thing or just like playing a game, think about all the friends you've had who have told you the story of, oh man, there was this one session and this happened and here's what happened. Even those stories, the line, and we had no idea it was going to happen, is such a footnote to the actual story. Like, The idea that it was a surprise feels fascinating and fun and scary, but it's so secondary to the things that are going to happen. And that's, I think, the thing that I've been most honestly surprised in this conversation, which again, thank you both for joining me and sharing all of your wisdoms, that not only do these safety tools prevent things from going very, very badly, they kind of ensure that things go very, very well. They don't just protect your friends from harm, they make your stories better. So if there's anything I'd like to leave you with, oh audience of mine, it is one, that, and two, the links where you can find my guests and their wonderful shows.
And all the safety tools.
And all the safety tools. The safety tools, of course, will be in the show notes. You will be able to click them with your mouse or finger if you are listening mobilely. And the other thing that will be in there, but I also want audiophonically, is the names and handles of all of your websites and socials. Natalie, where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me and the squad at thestorytellersquad.com. We have some fun art up there on our website. But if you're looking for ways to socialize with us, we are in the podcast Nexus server, which I'm sure Johnny will include an invite link to. We're there with a bunch of other very cool and creative podcasts. Our Twitter and Instagram are at Story Squad Cast, and nobody uses Facebook, so who cares?
Hey!
But that's generally the channels we are set up on. We're on Tumblr. Honestly, if you just search The Storyteller Squad, we're pretty much every link that comes up, except the Christian Writers Book Club. It's a whole thing. I'm sure they're fine, but we are most of the other Google results. And I'm on Twitter. I'm at Natalie Fuenia. It was mostly a thing I used for cosplay, but if you want to look at old pictures of me in costumes, there I am.
They're very nice costumes. Zoe?
Thank you.
Hi. You can find The Writer's Room on most of the podcatchers, mainly Spotify, Apple, Google, all those things. We have an Instagram at Writer's Room 7C. We also have a Twitter at Writer's Room 7th. That's the number 7th. And when you're looking us up, it is The Writer's Room semicolon 7C. That will bring you immediately to our podcast and not many other writing novel casts that are out there, which are still good. They're still great. We love them a lot. But that is where you can find us. You can also, if you would like to join our Discord, it is called Hands, as in like
your hands.
Hands of the rose, with a little rose emoji. Our symbol is a black flag, which is a skull with roses on it. And we are active. The community is there talking about not only 7C, not only the podcast, but we interact with each other too. So if you're looking for another Discord place to chill and hang out and talk pirates and send silly memes, that's where you can find us. And that's where you can find all of our stuff. Our Instagram is very, very outdated, and I don't run the socials for Twitter. Our lovely cast member, Evan, does, but that's where you can find us.
Social media is an ever-changing mirage, and anyone who thinks they can keep up with it is under the age of 22.
You need a social media manager. That's the upfront. That is the disclaimer. If you're doing anything, you need a social media manager, because that in and of itself is its own damn job. Yeah.
I think that's the topic for a future book club. So the cheat code for all of these links will be in the show notes, where you can just click, not type, not Google, not get confused, and not have an unsafe table. Thank you both for joining me, and thank you to everyone for listening. And then I'm going to transition at this point to whatever the outro will be, which will be future Johnny's problem.
Yeah, that's for future Johnny.
Thanks for having us, Johnny. Take care, adventurers.
Thank you for having us, Johnny. Remember, friends, be safe and well.
This has been Book Club Safety Tools, presented by The Monsters Playbook. A big thank you to Natalie from the Storyteller Squad and Zoe from the Writer's Room. You can find all of our guests' shows and information in this episode's show notes, along with the safety tool resources we covered. Our theme song is by me, Johnny Grubb. The Monsters Playbook is produced and engineered by Maya Detchen and edited by Maya Detchen and Lauren Johnson. If you liked this episode, please tell a friend. We love friends. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Monsters Playbook, and on Twitter at Monster Playbook, and on Web 1.0 at monstersplaybook.com. And come hang out with us on Discord. We're fun. We'll be back on March 28th with the next episode of The Cover Story. I'll have some good news and some bad news. Thanks for listening, and play safely.